Blog Talk Radio.
Think big. ThinkBigRadio.com for all your realty, financial, business, and entertainment networking needs. Hello, ThinkBigRadio.com listeners. Mary the Encourager here. I'm your host today. I would like to thank you all for your continued support and for spreading the word about ThinkBigRadio.com. Have you spread the word today? Our co-host today is none other than Big, our founder. How are you doing, Big?
I'm doing fine, Mary, and I can't wait to get this exciting interview off the road here. This guy has done so many things that it's just, you know, so hard to just do this in 45 minutes. But, Mary, let's try to get this thing started.
All right. Our guest today is E. Geronimo Robinson, and he's hailing from the East Coast. You're going to hear more about him, but before we get started with this great story, let's share our guest contact information with you, our listeners. We want you to take note of this information. So, Geronimo, will you give us your website, email, contact number, any way that our listeners will be able to get in touch with you?
Well, Mary, I will be very happy to do so, and I want to say thank you very much to you and Big for having me on your show. I'm blessed and thankful to be here. And the contact information for the website, or the website address, is www.isacandimani, and that's spelled ISSACANDIMANI.com. So it's www.isacandimani.com. And the phone number, my contact phone number, is 301-524-1018.
All right. Thank you so much. We're going to get more of that information later, but we want to make sure that everyone gets that down, especially
cool.
Get that website, www.isacandimani.com, isacandimani.com.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. Well, let's get started. You know, this is how we always like to start. First of all, we take pleasure in being able to introduce big thinkers to our audience. And what we found is with big thinkers, there's always a story. So tell us a little about yourself.
Well, I have been in the disabilities field, working with adults and children with mental retardation, developmental disabilities, and mental health issues for the last, I'd say, about 25 years. And I've also been involved in the homeless movement. I have been one of those grassroots kind of guys standing in front of the White House about 20 years ago protesting for people's rights who are homeless. So in that work, I have found that a lot of times children with disabilities get left out of the picture in terms of some of the resources that are needed. So I've dedicated myself to being in that field for the last 20 to 25 years.
Wow, that's interesting. Now, did you you said stand in front of the White House, and I know that your contact information puts you in that Maryland, D.C. area. So did
exactly.
You grow up in that area?
Well, I grew up actually in Southern Virginia. I grew up in Norfolk and Virginia. And interestingly enough, my great-great-grandmother, who was a house slave, went on after slavery was finished to become the first black teacher in Norfolk, Virginia. Her name was Leah Lynch. So
wow.
She inspired me to want to work with people and to be an advocate for people with disabilities and an advocate for people who are poor, because of this amazing background I have with my family, with my great-grandmother and then some of her descendants in terms of the things they've done to promote education back in Virginia.
All right. So she was a big thinker even well before we were even thinking about these things, huh?
Yes. Yes, yes, indeed. Yes. What I like to do is I like to give honor to my ancestors. So typically, you know, the things that I've decided to work on in my career and my life, you know, with working with people with disabilities has really been to honor my ancestors.
That is a very beautiful thing. And I would love to also mention that February, our Black History Month, where every interview that we have, we're going to be mentioning a couple of people that were in African-American history that should be noted, and we'll definitely take note of that and mention that again for you. And
well,
second, What was it that drove you to have the passion with helping those with disabilities? Was it something personal that happened within your life or your family, or you just saw a need and decided that that was what made you really feel good?
Well, you know, I have a cousin who grew up with me who was mentally retarded, which I saw every weekend when I was a little boy. And I never forget, you know, just how much he impacted my life and just how much my mother was so kind to him and how she, you know, made sure that when he came over to our house to visit, that he felt comfortable, you know, in our home and so forth. And I always remember that. So when I grew up, you know, I decided to get an undergraduate degree in music, which has nothing to do with my field. But then I went on to get a master's degree in special education from the University of Virginia. And then I decided later on, while I was working in the homeless movement, and saw how many people had mental health issues who were homeless, I decided to go ahead and get a post-master's degree in psychology and psychotherapy at Harvard University. So then after I finished that particular program, I came back to the D.C. area and continued to work with people with disabilities. And I've done some really cool things in terms of taking delegations to other countries. I've taken some of my colleagues with me to the South of France and to the Middle East to speak about issues affecting people with disabilities in this country. And that's been a pretty cool thing to do, too.
Now you know, you said so much there. I got to go back. And you have an extensive education. But in addition to that, you said you've taken your colleagues to other countries?
Yes. Well, let me clarify, too. I chair a committee in the American Association on Mental Retardation. I chair a special interest group on minority issues and concerns. So I've been really involved on a national level with looking at issues involving people with disabilities from communities of color. So in that capacity, that has allowed me to get invited to speak in other countries. And so I'm a team player, so when I've been invited to speak places, I take my buddies with me.
All
and
right.
I've taken colleagues with me to speak at different international conferences. It's been really cool.
Mary, can you give out our number for our listeners who are out there listening to, so that they'll know which number to call in?
Yes, if I'm sure we have people who are listening in on the Internet, but if there are people who would like to call and make a comment or question, interact with our guests, the call-in number is 718-664-9989. So feel free to give us a call at 718-664-9989. Now, I want to come back to you, Geronimo. You have talked a bit about your background, and it's really interesting when I talk to big thinkers. We hear it over and over. People may start in one field and then find themselves drawn to something else. We had an actress who started out in veterinarian, wanted to be a veterinarian, and you started with music, which I'm sure has helped you with your discipline and your focus and moved
right
on special ed and psychology and more. But let me just tell our audience how a little bit about how you had defined your program. You said that your interest is in preventing the elimination or extermination of the population of the nation of Botswana and all of
right
Southern Africa due to AIDS and the development of the Orphans and Vulnerable Children Project in Botswana. Could you tell
right
us some more about that? Because we're talking about big thinkers, and you've taken this beyond the White House to the entire world view.
Well, you know, when you talk about, you know, how people can go from one field to another, that's exactly what happened to me. I actually went to Botswana looking to invest in doing a wellness center there with another lady who's become a business partner of mine over in Botswana. Her name is Sally Pillar. And it's funny because while I was over there to look at trying to invest or help her to do a wellness center, I saw the need for programs to help orphans, and I saw that, you know, there's a huge problem with orphans in that country. And I also did some later research to find out that the country probably would become extinct in another 40 to 50 years, that there,
wow,
there would not be enough children to keep that country going. And the country knows it. They're working frantically to try to do different programs to help, you know, their own people. So I came up with a program while I was there, really in the last minute, kind of like, you know, in the spur of the moment, I came up with a program and developed a clinical program to develop wellness centers across the country to prevent the children and the orphans from catching AIDS so that they will not catch AIDS like their parents and die like their parents. And let me say this, too. The majority of the programs that are currently in place in Botswana, in South Africa, and all throughout the continent really target adults with AIDS. My program is fundamentally different in that I'm not really focusing on the adults. My focus is on the children to do prevention before they become sexually active, before they catch diseases, so that they will not catch those diseases and have to worry about the treatment and the medications and so forth. So it's really different in concept of what's taking place over there right now, you know, among the majority of the programs that are in Southern Africa.
Now, that is a big thinker. When you decided to start that program, what did you view as a challenge? Because it would seem to me there were plenty of challenges with that.
Well, you know, it's funny because the lady who I was working with over there, I asked her, you know, could I possibly meet with some of the leaders of the country, you know, before I left to talk about my proposal. And so she said, okay. So she made a few phone calls, and she set up an interview with me and the Minister of Education for the country and the Head of Social Services for the country. So the night before I had my presentation with those people, I just made up this whole concept for about 80 to 100,000 orphans. And then I presented it to them the next morning, and they both liked it. So my point to everybody listening is that, you know, sometimes, you know, it's not good to think too much about what you want to do. You need to just come up with an idea and just do it. Because if you think about it, you say, oh, that's an impossible. Nobody can come up with an idea that's going to help an entire generation of children for a country. But if you don't give it too much thought and you say, you know what, there's a need, I'm going to help, I'm going to do this, and you just have God give you that focus and just move forward, anything is possible.
You know, that is exactly how big thinkers think. Not only as a big thinker, is we call a big thinker one who just thinks about a certain thing, but one who takes action. And you just explained it better than I could explain it by just thinking about it and even writing it down. When that came to you, it came from your heart. So you just let your heart speak. And even though you may have seemed as if you were rushed, you were able to bring something to a country that was going to benefit them. And that's what we love about our show is, you know, having big thinkers on like you and helping you guys create a network of big thinkers so that we all can share and assist each other in our goals.
Right.
You're listening
to
thinkbigradio.com, where big thinkers come to teach and learn. Your goals are our goals, and your success makes us successful.
Now, once again, let me just make sure that for our listeners who may be listening on the Internet or who are listening by phone or by archive, people can contact you by going to your website at www.isaacandimani.com, or they can contact you by what phone number?
At 301-524-1018.
Okay. Now, I'm sorry, I may have interrupted a thought. Go right ahead.
You know, I think that one thing that people need to understand, too, is that oftentimes people who do or have big thoughts and have big visions, you know, if you think about it too hard, they'll become scared, and then things won't get done. So it really is important to just, you know, to come up with your idea and also tell your friends about it, but don't tell people who you think are going to knock it down. Tell people who are your support people who have been supportive of you in the past so that they can help to, you know, to support what you're trying to do, support your vision, and be there for you. I'll give you an example. I told a young man named George Rathbone, who is a clinician here in the D.C. area, who has a company called Developmental Support Associates. And he works with people with disabilities in the D.C. area. And so he co-wrote the whole proposal for me. It's about a 50-page proposal. He co-wrote the thing with me. I brought him over to Africa with me. He met these wonderful people and these wonderful children. And he's been inspired to donate his time to help me because, you know, he's the kind of person who is a forward thinker, and he, you know, and believed in my vision. So it's really important to find people who will support your vision rather than try to knock your vision down.
Well, let me ask you this. When you talk about your vision and you talk about partnering with others, then I'm sure you have plans to continue to grow and to expand. How could people be of most value to you in helping to grow this vision?
Well, what's happening now is that, you know, I have started a nonprofit to go along with the work with Isaac Imani that company has done with me to develop the clinical protocols in Botswana. So what's happening now is that I'm developing a nonprofit, which has gotten incorporated. The nonprofit is called For Those in Need, and For Those in Need Incorporated. And as soon as we get our 501c3 status, then I'm going to be raising money for the program, because basically I've been using my own money for the last couple of years, and I've been, you know, putting thousands and thousands of dollars of my own money into this project. So this nonprofit is going to help raise money. I've got sororities and other organizations who want to help me raise money for the project. So once that 501c3 status is there, I would like to go and speak to different people and have pictures of the beautiful children, pictures of how beautiful, you know, Botswana is. I like to bring it to different organizations and then have people help me raise money and send teams of people over there to Botswana. I've got colleagues in the Middle East, in Europe, and here in the U.S. who want to come over and help me to develop these wellness centers in the different population center areas of the country. So, you know, I want to be able to raise money to send teams of people over to get these wellness centers started. Now that we've, you know, done the clinical protocols and met with the government and they told us what they need and we've agreed to what's needed over there, I need to just go in and get these wellness centers begun once we get that 501c3 status started with the government or approved by the IRS, I should say.
Okay.
Well,
now,
you can put my name on that list.
Yeah,
if you need some help that way, then never fail to call and ask, because if I can't go personally, I have a team that can go over there and assist in that work.
Fantastic. Fantastic. I thank you so much for that.
And, you know, as you were talking, I just think about some of the guests we've interviewed just recently who have, you mentioned taking pictures. We had a photographer who talked about his passion and how his passion was one that was helping people. And we have talked with a young lady who has given her time and effort to helping us to learn how we can find other ways other than just using our own funds, how we can use some commercial applications to be able to bring some funds into our organizations. So I'm thinking that there may be some connections between some of our previous callers as you listen to some of our archive shows and as we talk more. And that's what I'm hoping, as people are listening to the call, they will see that there's an idea that they've had and they weren't sure how it was going to ever grow, but it might be that it gets connected with some of the big thinkers that we've been interviewing, and we can all learn and grow together.
Sounds good. Sounds very good. Yes. And
in fact,
the other
go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, I'm always impressed with our founder, with Big, and the ideas that he has brought forth, and just how in a short period of time, just by our interviews with the people we've met and people who have contacted us about interviews, how our world has just expanded. And here we're talking about Botswana, you know. And, and tell me this, where is Botswana?
Botswana is the next country up from South Africa. South Africa is the lowest country on the continent.
Okay.
So when you look on the map, it's the next country directly north of South Africa.
So is that on the western or on the eastern coast? Or the
well, remember, South Africa is the lowest country on the continent. When you see the bottom of that continent,
that's
the country. That's the country of South Africa. And the next country up, directly on top of South Africa, is Botswana.
Okay.
And Botswana borders on Victoria Falls, which is the largest falls on the planet Earth.
Oh, okay. Now, you have these thoughts, and you're working very well with people in other countries, but I understand you're also doing some work here in the U.S. You have a passion here as well. Can we talk a little bit about what you're doing here? Where's your passion here?
Well, I have the nonprofit For Those in Need Incorporated is going to do work in Botswana. Is also going to be doing grant applications. I want to go ahead and get some grants to do more programs here, residential programs for people with disabilities. I've got a lady named Delphine Hudson Crosby who is going to be helping me to get some grant applications done and then start some programs once we get the grants to work with people with disabilities, possibly do some work with veterans who have disabilities. So we're looking at a range of things to do, you know, with that organization here, and the money that we raise will also be used for Botswana. So we'll be doing a number of different things with that particular organization as a nonprofit. And the other thing that's really cool, too, is that my partner with my colleague Dee and another gentleman named Nehemiah Spence, they have their own businesses and own, you know, organizations. And so, you know, by helping, we're going to help each other get going. And by them helping me and me helping them, we can all take our resources and really combine them together to do some really good things.
Wow. You know, it's funny that you mentioned that about the disabled veterans. I'm a ex-Marine myself, and actually next month, the second Tuesday, we have a gentleman on who's in charge of veteran affairs around the country for an organization. So we'll be sure to have him listen in to this interview, and maybe you guys can link up, and we can be assisted that way with the proper grants and things for that portion of your company.
Fantastic. That sounds great. I appreciate that.
One of the things that neither of you might know, I didn't know that about your background there, but also I work in the field of procurement and financial contracting, and I know that there are programs that are set up to encourage veterans that are disabled or have been disabled during their activities to be able to get funding through the government for projects that they're working on. So there are many avenues that we can explore. But here, I want to ask you this. Why is it important for Americans, African Americans and other Americans, to be concerned about the continued existence of African countries?
Well, you know, that's an excellent question. And actually, every time I go to Botswana, some of the natives there ask me, why are you so interested in helping our children and our people here? They ask me that every time I come, you know, because they can see that I really am very concerned about what's happening over there. And one of the things I say to them is, it's not in the best interest of Black Americans or of all people to see parts of Africa disappear and become extinct, since that is the ancestral home of our species. The Homo sapiens species began in Africa. We know this now. And it began in East Africa. It is not in our best interest to see that happen. And let me give you all an example in terms of what happened after World War II. After World War II was finished and most of Western Europe was in shambles and we had just been destroyed, the United States government came up with the Marshall Plan, where they took billions of dollars to rebuild Germany, France, England, and so forth, because the United States government thought it was in their best interest to not see Western Europe disappear and just fall by the wayside. And I also believe, and I have a passion for that, to make sure that Africa does not become extinct, because what's happening is that there are certain tribes who have disappeared in West Africa because of AIDS. It is just amazing to see the devastation that's taking place in that continent because of AIDS. So we need to be aware of that, and we need to make sure it does not happen.
You are listening to ThinkBigRadio.com, where big thinkers come to teach and learn. Your goals are our goals, and your success makes us successful. You are bringing up so many interesting concepts here, things that I haven't really thought about. You know, we tend to think about projects that we're working on, but how many times do we really look at a project and see that what we're doing may be helping to prevent extinction of an entire country?
Yes.
I think that is awesome. And let me ask you this. Is there a link between your dedication and determination to help Botswana and other African orphans, along with your passion to support the Municipal Opera Company of Baltimore, Maryland?
Well, actually, what I like to do in my life is connect everything together.
Okay.
And some people who are listening might say, well, how in the world is your work in Africa connected with an opera company? But this is no regular opera company. This is one of the few Black opera companies in the United States. It's the Municipal Opera Company of Baltimore. It was founded in 1992 by a lady named Dorothy Jones, an African-American singer, who found few opportunities when she came back from Europe to really do her craft. So here in the Baltimore area, so she decided to found her own company to give the opportunity to young African Americans, Hispanic people, Asians, and young whites too, the ability to perform and do opera. And so her company sings the regular European operas. We stage those. We also do Negro spirituals, which is a wonderful and beautiful and sophisticated music form, which needs to be preserved. And we also, I think even in the most important sense, we perform opera composed by African-American composers, which is
wow.
really cool,
mm-hmm.
you know. And many of the black opera companies in this country have closed down in the last few years. So we're in a race to keep this one going. I'm the president of the board of directors. And when they asked me to take over that role, I asked them, you know, would they mind if I brought African orphans over to the U.S. to teach them about the beauty and the elegance of African-American Negro spirituals and how that connects to Africa? And they said, sure. So, you know, once you raise money for your company to do so, we'd love to host some of the African orphans coming here to the U.S. to learn about the Negro spirituals and how the Negro spirituals are connected to our African heritage and to our ancestral background. So that's how I kind of connect those two, because I love my, you know, the Negro spirituals, and I think I told you all before about, you know, my great-great-grandmother being the first black teacher down in Southern Virginia, where she was also the first black organist allowed to play at a black church in Southern Virginia. Blacks were not allowed to be professional musicians at their own churches right after slavery. So she was the first black musician allowed to play at a black church in Norfolk, Virginia. So I said, well, you know, to give back to her because of what happened in that instance, that would be great for me to work with the opera company to help to honor her as well, given her, you know, what happened to her and her musical history.
Now I'm going to give out the number for guests to call in if they want to call in. And after I do that, I want you to give her name again so we can make sure that people make note of that. The call-in number for anyone who has a question or comment is 718-664-9989. That's while our program is live for these last remaining minutes. Okay, what is her name, the first black teacher in that Norfolk, Virginia area?
Her name was Leah Lynch.
Leah?
Yeah, Leah Lynch.
Okay, Leah Lynch.
And can you give out your information again so as our listeners will know how to contact you?
Sure. The website is www.isaacandimani.com, and that's isaacandimani.com. And let me give people my personal email address as well. It's eg.robinson, R-O-B-I-N-S-O-N, @verizon.net.
You know, now when you mentioned how you need to raise money for different things and, you know, getting grants from the government, after the call, you may want to talk to Mary about one of the things that she's doing, and especially that might be, you know, that could raise money as far as for, you know, war. You know, using less water in the environment and things like that, because I think that might be a great fit. You know, as big thinkers, one of the things that we do, our minds continuously race as we feed upon each other's accomplishments and the things that we've done. And just thinking about your interview and what you're doing over there with the opera company reminds us of other individuals that we've interviewed that is in the arts and entertainment field, whereas we've had actors on who have their own acting studios and they teach. We've had singers on who have their own studios and teach, and maybe combining some of those different groups, you know, where it has voice, instrument, acting, and forming one large school. It might be even better for us as a group to make things happen. But it's just an idea that I want to put out there to our listeners and our past guests so that we can make, you know, make this show just not about interviewing people, but make it work.
Well, you know, that's a wonderful idea. And I think that what people need to understand and the listeners need to understand is that we are stronger when we combine together our resources. We are stronger when we actually network with each other, because, you know, the more we do so, we can actually, you know, create larger and larger amounts of resources that we can use to help each other and help other people. That's a wonderful
idea. Well, we strongly believe in cooperative economics, because it's about exactly what you're saying there, is combining resources. And we don't just necessarily, you know, combine resources as just our group of people being African-Americans, but people of like mind and character, you know, regardless of, you know, race, religion, background, because that's what really makes a big thinker, you know, their belief in God and building investments globally. You know, that's one of the, a couple of the things that big stands for. And I'm just glad that you agreed to come on, and I'm sure that we'll be hearing a lot from you more in the future, and actually networking and actually working with you. I'm very interested in the things that you've been talking about, and what's something that you would like to mention that you just did not mention? I mean, anything that may be totally off the subject that our listeners may want to know about you, other than your business, because we're all business, but what is it that makes you smile?
Well, I think that the concept of collaboration with people in other countries is something that's really cool for me.
Wow.
To be able to get up in the morning and say that, you know, I have friends in Botswana who not only I work with, but they invite me to their weddings of their children. So when I go to Botswana, I go to these wonderful weddings, and I go to these really cool events to, you know, to have a chance to just talk and network with people and just have fun. So, you know, I want people to know that, you know, you can't do something that you believe in without being able to have fun. It's fun. I like to have fun while I'm doing
it. Wow.
Now, I've got to interject here because, you know, I wasn't sure if I was going to say this, but I think it's important to talk about how we even met. The fact is, I have a great time meeting big thinkers, and I am so glad to be one of the co-hosts on the program. But when we met, it wasn't in that environment at all. It was the fact that we had some mutual friends. And I know one thing that I saw that you seemed to have fun with, you cut a mean step out on that dance floor.
you've discovered my one of my other passions that nobody knows about as much.
Yeah.
Dancing and laughter, it all goes well.
Well, you know,
well,
that's
what I think Big was asking about. We want people to know that that all of us are regular, real people, and we have a good time, and we have big ideas, and we also know how to have fun, too. So go right ahead.
Well, that's what I do when I'm in Botswana. Look, I'm meeting with people all day, talking about programs, but then they take me to weddings and different parties, and so I get a chance to dance and listen to African music. But you know what? The funny part about it is that about 60% of the time, the music is Black American music. Wherever I go in Botswana, they're listening to all the oldies and goodies from Motown and stuff. It's hilarious. When I go places,
wow.
I hear all my music, my own music. You know, it's crazy. It's really James Brown and everything.
Well, that's a different light on the subject.
yes. It's funny. I'm halfway around the world and I'm listening to Michael Jackson and James Brown and everything, you know. So it's hilarious. So those are things you can't pay to have those kind of things happen. Those are just nice memories that, you know, are just so wonderful to have. And I love music.
That's a funny thing. That music must travel everywhere because I remember traveling through the Philippines, and when I went into town, there was places in town where all they played was the old Motown. And I'd look up like, what is that doing playing over here? You know, but it's that old good music. That is so funny.
Yeah, it's hilarious. And, you know, and the other thing I was going to say, too, is that that also is what I do when I go to, when I take delegations to the south of France or to Cyprus. You know, we do our trainings, we do our speeches. Even the time it's time to go out, meet people, dance, have a good time. So, Murray, you have discovered my secret passion.
Well, that's one of my passions, too. I think we've got to use our rhythm somehow. You know, and let me connect that, if I can. Now, we didn't plan a lot of these questions, and that's how it makes the program so valuable. But, you know, I think that sometimes when people think about ballet, they think of that about that as being so totally different from
right.
the kind of movements that we would tend to see when we're thinking about some of the those artists that you mentioned. How do you connect that? How do people? How do we get people motivated to even take a look at what's going on there?
In the arts, you mean, or?
With the ballet, how do we, with our young people, how do we get them to realize that this is an art form, or even with our adults, so that they would be something they would support?
Well, and now, in terms of the opera, we do, you know, we haven't really done as much ballet stuff, but in terms of the opera stuff that I'm involved in.
I'm sorry, okay.
Oh, okay, I just want to make sure we're talking about the same thing.
Yes, we are, okay.
With the opera company, you know, it's really important for Americans to know that you know, Negro spirituals are a treasured part of our background, our past. It is a beautiful art form, and, you know, we love all of our opera, but it's also really cool to be able to know that there are black composers of operas, you know, and so we perform those things, and we do a wonderful job of that. The director, Dorothy Jones, she's a beautiful African-American woman who has been in the field for many years, who has tried to make sure these treasured art forms are kept alive, because remember, most of the black opera companies in the United States have closed down within the last 5 or 10 years. New York, Atlanta, St. Louis, they have been closing down. We have one of the only black opera companies left in the country. And those who are listening too, it's important to know that the black American community has led the world in many ways. I don't think we realize this. Our music, our artwork, our dance, our sports. We have some of the greatest sports athletes in the world, and I think the whole world has heard of some of our athletes, Tiger Woods and Muhammad Ali, and same thing in music, the same thing in literature. So I think it's important for people to know that if we have one of the few black opera companies in the country, that means it's probably one of the few black opera companies in the world. It's one of the few. And people need to understand that, what that means from a global sense and how important this company is. And when I was in Southern Africa, I asked some of my colleagues there, do you have opera companies there? And they said, oh, sure, yeah, we do. You know, they're founded by Europeans in South Africa. So they're not black opera companies, even though they're in an African country.
Oh, okay.
So it's important for people to know, again, this company in Baltimore is one of the few black opera companies in the world.
Do they have events? On a regular basis or special?
Oh, yes, we have operas. We do operas. We do Negro spiritual concerts. We do black, you know, music concerts. So if anybody is interested in that, you know, give me a call, too, and I will direct you to the phone number and the address to the director of the company because, again, we're always looking for donations, for support. If anybody out there in the D.C. area or Baltimore is interested in being on the board of directors for our company, we need more board members. So we'll be happy to get your information.
What about Virginia?
Hey, if they're interested in coming up and driving up to Baltimore, we'd love to have them, you know?
Okay. Well, you know
we'd
what I'm thinking? It would be, hey, Big, are you still there? I think it would be great if we had a Think Big night at the opera.
Oh, yeah. You know, that would be great to have a couple of the composers on, or just maybe one of our Sunday segments. We can start, you know, playing some of that type of music. We'll do our segment and then play a couple of pieces from just to let, you know, people know that it's out there.
Cool.
And some of our co-hosts are going to be on the East Coast, so we never know what, you know, what might be happening in terms of the time frame. I think there are
Sounds
ways
wonderful.
That we can get this word out. We need to work together and just make sure that we can preserve some of this history, because you sound like a person who has been on tap with the fact that there are things that are diminishing, and we've got to get involved in order to keep our own heritage from being extinct.
Oh, exactly. That is so important. And the partnerships are so important. The things you both have mentioned, you and Big have mentioned about partnering, that's so important for, you know, organizations that are new or don't have as much resources. You got to partner with people, you know?
Well, one thing I know that we've talked a lot about your outreach, and people have helped you in many ways, but people, things, places, times, who would you like to thank as we're getting down to wrapping up? We want to make sure we express our gratitude, so who would you like to thank?
Well, there's a few people, of course, I like to give props to, and, you know, one is Sally Pillar, because I'm going to forward this to her in Botswana, and she'll be able to click in and hear the archiving of this, even though she won't be able to hear it directly.
Yeah.
She'll be able to click in and archive it. So, in fact, she'll probably pass it on to many of her colleagues in Botswana and in Southern Africa. So that'd be cool. You have some more contacts over there, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to thank her, and also want to thank George Rathbone, the gentleman who helped to co-write or the co-author of my proposal. He just donated his time and efforts to help me to write this proposal, and donated his time to come help me in Botswana meet with government officials to talk about our vision to work with the authors and to help, you know, develop wellness centers for the country. And then Delphine Hudson Crosby, the young lady who's the treasurer of For Those in Need Incorporated. She's donated her time and money to help to get this nonprofit off the ground so that we can go ahead and, you know, begin to raise money and get grants so we can go ahead and move forward again, you know, with this project. So I really want to give props to her. I want to give props to another young gentleman named Nehemiah Spence, who's going to be the secretary of the board of directors to really help us to get things going for the company. So those are some of the people I want to give thanks to. I want to thank my daughter. She did a wonderful job with the website for creating the website for Isaac and Imani Incorporated and for the Botswana project and the Botswana proposal. I really appreciate what she did. And, you know, I also want to give props to my ancestors and to my mother for telling me about my beautiful ancestors and all the beautiful and wonderful African-American women in my family who have done amazing things. And my mother, Audrey Ann Robinson, has just been an inspiration to me, as well as, you know, I got different friends, young lady named Angela Pender, who's listening to the show, who wants to give props to. She got her own little organization she's trying to get started. The these are good things with little kids, you know, black youth in the community in Baltimore. So it's a lot of us doing good things in the community and trying to help people and trying to really, you know, move forward. You don't hear as much about it because all you hear about mainly is a negativity on TV and on the news. You don't hear about all the good things our community is doing, you know.
We're down to the last few minutes. Hold that the last couple of thank yous because we do have a caller from the 410 area code. So,
okay.
Caller, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, we only have just a few moments left, but do you have a comment or a question for our guest?
I have a question for your guest tonight.
Okay.
And my question is, what was your inspiration for this project? That's my question.
Okay, and what's your first name?
Angela.
Angela, okay. Okay, yes, we're wrapping up, so if you could very quickly.
Yes, my inspiration was my ancestors and the wonderful things that my ancestors had done to fight for justice and equality back in North Virginia, as we had mentioned before.
Okay.
So how did you get connected with Botswana?
Well, we talked about that earlier, and I talked about how I had, you know, met some people over there and had done some really cool things over there. So we did go into detail about that. And we also talked about you too, Angela, before you got on the air.
Oh, okay.
What I'm going to suggest is that you make sure that you click back on and listen to the archived version. It'll be up and running probably in another hour or so after the program. But thanks so much for calling in and asking that question. We're down to our last few minutes, and I just want to make sure that I didn't cut you off from expressing your thanks to anyone else before I get down to my last 30 seconds.
All right. Well, thank you.
Okay, thanks. All right.
Yeah, I also wanted to say that another inspiration is Victoria Jackson Gray Adams, one of the founders of the Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party. And she and Fannie Lou Hamer are responsible for Congress passing 1965 Voters' Rights Act, giving black people the right and protection to vote. And that was my godmother.
Wow.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for being here. There's so much more. I want to hear from you again. Can we look forward to hearing from you again?
Oh, I would love to come on again. Would love to do so because a lot of things we talked about, probably, you know, we could go into more detail about, you know.
Okay. Well, we look forward to helping your business grow and assisting others with your knowledge to help their business grow also. You are listening to ThinkBigRadio.com, where big thinkers come to teach and learn.
And learn.
Your goals are our goals, and your success makes us successful. We just want to thank you all for tuning in again and listening to our program. And make sure you get in touch with us.
Radio.
Good night.